So how are things going on with you, you know, with your company? And maybe let's start from the present times, right? So we have all the challenges you can think of.
Well, it's nice to meet you, Pramod. And we're doing great. We are obviously in the COVID pandemic, but in terms of our operations, we've discovered that a lot of things can be done from home. And a lot of things you can adjust to. This is a general problem you always have as an entrepreneur. There's always something going on. And as long as people are staying safe, we're dealing with just like any other business challenge.
And what has changed, you know, in your business context, right? If you think about the pre-COVID situation, perhaps there are things that you are doing it before, and now perhaps, you know, you're doing it slightly different, or your service delivery is the same, but then the approach is different as far as the delivery is concerned.
So yeah.
How do you see this contrast?
Yeah, I think the two most obvious things, many things have obviously changed, right? But the two most primary things, so the two things is, number one is we can't go on visits and have visitors in the office. So for a solution such as ours, where we say, okay, we can charge your iPhone or your phone over the air, it's a lot more powerful if you can see it firsthand, right? If you can show it firsthand to someone rather than doing it over Zoom. The second thing is that people need our team members, you need to be more flexible, right? Schools are shut down in California, meaning that schooling is done from home over Zoom. A lot of jobs have moved to home. This puts a lot of pressure on family life, right? If you have children and you have to kind of be there when they're on Zoom, or you have to work, it's distracting, right? So people work different hours. They do things much more on their own time, but we certainly haven't seen a drop in productivity on that one. On the business development side, let's say talking to relationships, it's actually very interesting. Some relationships have gone on slower and some of them have accelerated. And the reason is, it's the same reason actually. So it depends really on like what the company is that you're talking to. Some large companies, there's much more red tape, or it's much more bureaucracy that's being complicated by the fact that everyone is doing everything remotely. Other companies, and particularly maybe some of the more innovative companies, they had time to sort of like take a step back and say, what are the things, what are the capabilities that we would want to enable? What are the things we want to be doing in the next year, the next 3 years, the next 5 years? So they become much more engaged, right? Because they say, hey, if we can power our IoT devices, or power our wearables, or power our sensors, or power our phones with a new solution, right now may be the best time to look at this. So it's interesting. It's just a different set of boundary conditions, so to speak. But overall, it's kind of business as usual.
It's interesting. The whole industry has been really trying to adapt, right, to the new situation. And perhaps for the industry like yours, it's not a difficult thing. Perhaps, you know, we are all using internet, you know, to our advantage and providing services. And that works in our favor, you know, to a larger portion. And in fact, it is even better now that, you know, there's no challenges that we have to actually face our client, right? So we are facing our clients from the Zoom, and that would be it, right? So in that regard, perhaps we are doing fine. But how do you see this being a, let's say, going forward for a lot of other clients who are perhaps relying on you, right? How do you see that impact coming towards you?
I think it really depends on the specific industry or the specific client. I think each industry, each client will have their own unique challenges, right? So I think it's for high-tech businesses, I think COVID and the pandemic is probably the easiest to deal with. And I think the biggest challenge is on the personal side, having to work from home, and particularly if you have family and children, and having to now provide services effectively. And this sounds a little bit, I have kids myself, so I don't want this to sound too heartless, but it's You know, if you have kids that go to school, and if these are younger kids, the school provides you with a service, like a babysitting service to some extent, right? You have time to, I have time to go to work. My wife has time to go to work. So it's unfair on many families, and particularly many women, because, and you can see that, you know, women, at least in the US, I don't know how it is in Europe specifically, but women are dropping out of the workforce in much larger numbers. And to some extent, that's a real setback. But for high-tech industry, like just for the general industries, yes, people are using internet. You still use your phones, even much more so. There's really no slowdown. Apple and the Apples, the Samsungs, the Googles, the Facebooks, they're still making plenty of money. I think the challenge is really for service type of industries, right? Like personal services, restaurants, that kind of thing. Entertainment is devastated. Transportation, those are really hurting. I mean, the concert, you know, people who organize concerts or even in Los Angeles, the film industry, they can't shoot any films. And you have a lot of like contractor type of workers, you know, screenwriters, camera crews, those kinds of people. They're all out of work. There's simply no work. So that's really hard on them. But for electronics industry, for better or worse, I don't think there's too much change in demand and supply, so to speak.
So maybe let's talk about a little bit, deep dive into Guru, this company Guru. And maybe let's talk about what it offers. And then perhaps maybe you can start from your own background and say this is what you've been doing for the last 100 years.
At least.
Yeah, let's start from there and see how it evolves.
Okay. Guru is, we have a solution to sending electric power over the air at short distances, at long distances, to power devices without having to put cables in. When you tell people that, they have two questions. One is, does it charge my phone? Yes, it does. Does it charge my car? You probably want to use a much more, you know, like a charging pad for your car rather than charging your car while it's driving, because cars use up a lot of energy and you are physically transmitting power over the air. The applications are almost endless. To my background, we developed this at Caltech. Some of the early ideas came from my former PhD advisor and co-founder, Ali Hajimiri, who is a full professor at Caltech. He basically convinced me to quit my job in 2013 to join this effort and fully develop the technology to make it from like a cool technology to something that's mass producible and mass marketable. So like have the right price points, have the right form factors, make it mass producible, basically. To me, so I've had dozens, if not hundreds of people over the years tell me I'm wrong or I'm full of it or not so nice words. That's actually, to me, a sign that we are onto something. The applications are almost endless. So I used to have this pitch deck slide showing Captain, I'm a big Star Trek fan. So it was Captain Picard showing his tricorder to the alien and saying, you know, I'd show you all the cool features. I just forgot to charge this thing last night. So this seems a little bit silly, right? This is going to be as ubiquitous as Wi-Fi, meaning in the not too distant future, you will expect to go onto a Starbucks or your coffee shop or whatever you have it. And you're like, okay, where's my wireless, but will my device charge? Just like you expect Wi-Fi in your coffee shop, right? There will be lots of applications that will be possible that are not possible right now without this kind of capability. So again, the same thing, the comparison point to Wi-Fi would be cloud storage. And when Wi-Fi was rolled out and invented in the 90s and early 2000s, people didn't really think about cloud storage, but you need Wi-Fi to enable cloud storage because you want your phone to have the same photos as your whatever, tablet, and so on. It's applicable to consumer devices, so your wearables, your phones, your tablets, your smart home speakers, your what have you. There are lots of industrial applications for sensors, let's say retail tags, electronic shelf labels in stores. It's a real problem if you have an electronic shelf label that comes with a battery, and after 2 years or 5 years or what have you, the battery runs out. You either throw everything out Or you have to replace batteries. You're not going to replace 10,000 batteries in a store. So you throw everything out. And if you can have, let's say, a robot that we have that goes around and charges everything wirelessly, it's a very different value proposition. And all of a sudden you can think about, okay, maybe my shelf label just doesn't show a price. Maybe it has some interactivity and so on. Things that require more power that would otherwise be prohibitive because the shelf label would not run out after 2 years, but after 1 week.
It reminds me of one of the craziest idea that I had long time back. This is like a few years ago where I was thinking, you know, what if my phone power runs out? And instead of, if you remember back in those days, we used to have this top up, right? So whenever you run out of your, let's say the money on the phone, then you would receive a notification as an SMS, and then your, your balance is activated, like added, right? So then you can start to talk to people again, because back then there was no such thing called postpaid service, right? Yet. So it reminds me, and then that time I was thinking, like, what if we get the power similarly, right? So what if we get the power as an SMS, so that as soon as I receive the SMS from my wife or from my peers, then that would work as a power package or something. Now, like, you know, it was in my mind, and I shared to my friends, and they said, like, you are nuts, right? You don't you don't belong here. Right now that, you know, at least, you know, I can tell them, right, you know, it is not exactly the same way, but maybe it's in a similar way we are getting the power.
It's the same solution, right? You don't want to have to think about it.
Yeah.
You don't want to have to think about it. And that's ultimately what we gain the freedom. And a phone doesn't use all that much power. I mean, the reason it takes 2 hours to charge, or even if you have fast charging, make it whatever, 20 minutes or something, it's because you're charging it much faster than you're using the power. The idea is that you can either charge it, but if once it's ubiquitous, once you have a charger on your at work or in your car and in your coffee shop and your nightstand table, you will never ever have to worry about it. So you forget that this thing can actually run out of power. And then when it actually does, because you take it out hiking and whatever, you forgot your charger, there's no coverage or whatever it is, you get very upset. The same way you now get upset when, you know, God forbid, you're 20 minutes without internet connectivity and you just can't follow your social media for, yeah. 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 You know, say you feel naked and, you know, very uncomfortable. And then you have gurus that tell you it's a good thing maybe sometimes to be without it, you know.
Yeah.
So
that's good because the thing is, this opens up a lot of questions right in my head. Now I'm thinking, okay, you know, internet has its own frequency, right? The Wi-Fi has its own frequency, and perhaps the frequency is now acceptable, right, as far as being able to not affect, right, the people's life. Now we are talking about electricity that actually also travels on the air. Of course, like, you would have done the research and so forth, but this is a layman's question, right? So don't you think it has challenges with humans interacting, or does that even affect humans, right, in some ways?
Yeah, I mean, every radio device, this is your cell phone, this is your TV tower, this is your microwave, they go through regulatory approval. They abide by the same safety standards. And there's some dependence on frequency, and I'll talk a little bit about that. But basically, a regulatory body like the FCC in the US, if you have RED certification in Europe, devices are safety tested. So they're the moment they're marketed, they're absolutely safe. The way they're tested is to avoid exposing humans to potentially unsafe levels. Now, any device that's on the market is emitting levels that are orders of magnitude lower that is even potentially unsafe. Now, are there going to be concerns? Yes. When cell phones came out, and still you have people, and I'll try to be careful and understanding as to what I'm going to say now, but there were tons of people that were very concerned about cell phone usage when cell phones came out, right? Is it going to cause brain cancer? Is it going to be a nightmare? Blah, 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 blah. You still have a ton of people who are not convinced that cell phones are safe. Cell phones are absolutely safe. if they cause brain cancer, you'd see a multitude of people having problems these days. You don't. You have essentially the same rates of brain cancer, of all sorts of other cancers that could potentially be affected. Those rates have been flat for the last 25 years. Everyone is using cell phones all the time. There are physical reasons for this. And again, you'll find people that will claim something else, but RF frequencies produce heat. This is why your microwave can heat up your food. They don't ionize, so it's what's called non-ionizing radiation, which means that they can't cause a chemical change. They can't kick off electrons from your molecules, produce chemical change other than through heat, right? So the heat is the part that's potentially dangerous. I mean, if you heat up human tissue to a certain amount of by a certain amount, then that could be potentially damaging. The regulations are drafted around this, meaning there's only so much heat that you can absorb as a human, and below it, it's safe. For the reason that the human body is pretty well equipped to deal with heat. The human body generates about 100 watts of heat, 25 watts of that is in your head. Part of the reason why you can't have like 10x the brain size, or why that at least would be challenging is removing the heat, right? Right now, your brain is removing the heat through its arteries and through blood flow. It's actually 25 watts is not a small amount of heat. But the temperature rise, let's say that people, that CISPR and the ITU and the international regulatory agencies and bodies and where the national bodies take their data from, they're talking about, let's say, a temperature rise of 0.05 degrees Celsius or 1.1 degrees Celsius locally. These are things that if you walk up the stair, your body just, you know, your blood vessels will dilate a little bit more. With Guru in particular, we're in the millimeter wave frequency band. It actually doesn't penetrate the bodies. The difference mainly from, let's say, cell phones to what we are doing is our EM waves don't even penetrate the body. So part of the concern with cell phones is that the heat will be produced in your brain. You don't have heat sensors in your brain. So even remotely, if your brain was fried, you wouldn't feel it. You would just, you know, your brain would just be fried. With millimeter waves, if it were anywhere close to unsafe levels, you would actually feel it.
Because I was thinking about the transmission lines, you know, and on the close to the highways and so forth. And if you go underneath that, then sometimes there is an electromagnetic field perhaps that can perhaps kill you. Right. So I'm kind of thinking in that line, right? So I of course, like it's something that is not true as far as what you are offering, but still, you know, there is some kind of magnetic field that is produced as soon as the let's say the electricity is passing, right? So and that's where the thought is coming from, like, you know, whether or not that's going to be dangerous or is, you know, something.
Again, it's a question of dosage, like so many things in life, right? Yes, if you are in a powerful electromagnetic field, it'll affect you. Yeah. Power lines do not expose you to the same thing as an MRI machine does. Yeah. This is why with an MRI machine, you have trained personnel, whereas a power line, you can just leave there. It's different if you have a microwave oven. You don't want to stick your hand in a microwave oven while it's running. It wouldn't kill you immediately. I mean, it'll start heating up. I mean, you would feel that and then you would pull your hand out, right? But that's why a microwave oven has an interlock. The regulations for RF devices are below all of these levels. And again, if you're talking, this is why we're talking about, let's say, a cell phone, your body also has to absorb it, right? So again, if you take two power lines, you make a circuit with yourself, that's a whole order, those are orders of magnitude of different power. Plus you make yourself a conduit versus, let's say, even watt level power, right? So your Wi-Fi router is transmitting watt levels of power. Are you concerned that it'll kill you? To some extent, the science is pretty clear. It doesn't. It doesn't necessarily mean that everyone, you know, it's also personal choice, right? And I'm not disrespecting anyone's personal choice. There are regulators that don't put cell phones in their pockets because some point it's like, you know, but on a risk level, the regulations provide you with safe devices.
Yeah. Let's talk about the device itself, like your offering. So how does that work? Is it something that needs to be charged first and then, you know, you put it where you need it, or how does that work?
So it's basically like, if you think of a Qi charger, you need an enablement on the receiver device and you need a transmitter device. Mm-hmm. So in your cell phone, let's pick a cell phone as an example, needs to be Guru enabled. So it has a receiver device inside that would be able to receive the power and convert it to whatever lithium ion compatible power, DC power. It, just like a cell phone right now has a Qi coil in it. You need a transmitter device that needs itself a power source. So the transmitter may itself be powered from a battery that you then charge, or you just plug it into the wall like your Wi-Fi router. Mm-hmm. Or your Qi charger is also plugged into the wall, right? I mean, it needs to come from somewhere. The way it works is that the transmitter or generating unit that we have transmits a radio signal that carries power with it. Radio waves are like light, so it's just like light power, and transmit it specifically from the generator unit to the recovery unit in a directed point-to-point kind of fashion. It can adapt, meaning it can find where the device is. It can send power just to the device, not everywhere else. It can use some reflective surfaces. It can send it through typical plastics and so on. And you can move around with it. But it's basically a radio link. You're just not sending information. You're just sending the radio power.
So any kind of device can be charged, or there's a limitation at the moment? For example, you earlier mentioned maybe you can charge your Tesla or something, you know. But maybe in order to do that, perhaps you need a different set of applications, or maybe you need to adapt differently or something, right? Or that's not even a question right now.
There are no physical limitations per se. So when part of the programs we worked on at Caltech involved sending radio power from outer space. So you would have a satellite formation that uses solar power, converts it to RF power, and gets it to Earth. The reason being that you want to be able to have power through cloud cover or at night. And those were rather large amounts of power that you could specifically send to different regions. There's no limitation. For most practical purposes, we're looking at sending a couple of watts. You can charge your electric vehicle this way. This is probably the point where I would say, again, an electric vehicle uses about 10 kilowatts of power. Let's make it 10 kilowatts. You need to send that 10 kilowatts through the air. That's the point where you probably don't want to be in the path of that. I mean, you don't want to be in the path, like from a regular perspective, you weigh out what's considered safe. But it's also not it doesn't really solve a problem, our technology for electric vehicle charging. You know, you have charging pads or coils that you could use. Typically, your car is parked in a garage or somewhere. We are focused on consumer and industrial applications in the, you know, milliwatt to multi-watt power level.
More on the IoT space, right? So it could be...
Yeah, for cell phones.
Yeah, it could be sensors, it could be cell phones, or, you know, it could be those kind of devices, maybe cameras, you know.
Yeah, laptops, cameras, yeah.
Yeah.
So anywhere from a milliwatt to, let's make it 10, 20, even 100 watts, something like that.
And how are the customer reacting to this? Like when you have to think about the skeptical customers from beginning, like you had to sell it and then, you know, sell this idea really hard. As to now being able to consume it and for X amount of time, and then they're like, oh yeah, actually, Florian, I'm quite happy with this, and maybe can we do this or can we do that? Those kind of customers. And then you also have still customers who are skeptical. So how has that transition been so far for you?
Well, I mean, you need to solve a problem, right? So the question is, does either the customer does not really have a problem, then no matter how much you try to convince someone, you know, I mean, we're not solving every problem in the world. Yeah. Maybe they do have a problem, they just don't realize that they have a problem. And oftentimes they come to you and say, we have a problem that we'd like to solve. And this is the perfect solution for it, right? Yeah. So there's all of those. So in terms of for industrial customer, it's a bottom line calculation. You basically say, okay, what does it cost you to change your battery? So wire up your sensors, and how many sensors would you like to deploy? And what cost savings in the end you could have if you didn't have to change the battery. So you could put your sensors all over the place and not have to worry about it. Or you can, let's say in an agricultural kind of thing, right? Like instead of our robot going around, you can have a drone going around and charging things. How much money would that save you? And then it becomes like, well, it would save us this much money in this amount of time. So it's a financial calculation almost. For some of these applications, let's put a cell phone. For a cell phone, it's you're competing against things. Well, you're competing on price for different features, right? So it's hard to put an exact price tag on something like how much is it worth to the consumer to not have to plug in their phone? And you can have arguments about that. So let's stick with the cell phone. Some cell phone manufacturers will say, this is not a problem. We have fast charging. Others have said, no, this is actually a problem and we would love to have a solution. And then you talk about prices, timelines, and so on and convince them this way. But no one knows. This is like the smartphone. I mean, you remember when the iPhone came out. There are a couple of events that I clearly remember. One is the iPhone came out. And when I saw it, it immediately made sense, right? Yeah. I can surf the web. I can read what's on the web. Done. Convinced. Yeah. Yeah. Same with the internet. The first time I logged into the internet, I don't know, I looked up something, like something that probably was illegal to look up at the time. But
we're young, right? So
I would have to go to a library and search for hours for this, whatever, right? And here it is. You know, I went on Alta Vista and here it is. Like, this is going to revolutionize this thing. So I think like once you see it widespread, I think adoption will be rapid and fast. And in a couple of years, people will forget. And right now we are talking to a variety of different verticals on consumer and industrial type of applications.
One of the applications that you said is pretty interesting for me as well, because as a consumer, right? So if I'm going to a Starbucks or if I'm going to a public space, then that problem is always there. Right, that problem of charging or the slots not working, or sometimes the slots are not even available, and those kind of things, right? And that's one of the applications that I appreciate, you know, especially when you're traveling and you're in the train station or something, you know, if those kind of things like is working there, then I guess that's an interesting way to look at this particular problem. Because how many phone it might be a bad question, because perhaps you would scale it. How many phone devices you could charge at a time, or there is a limitation, or there are challenges there as far as how you beam those energy at one point in time?
Yeah. You can have a Starbucks. You can have a Starbucks that's enabled. Your phone also needs to be enabled. So the Starbucks kind of scenario, maybe I should use a different corporate name, maybe the Pete's or the... Yeah. The coffee bean kind of scenario makes a lot of sense to the end user, right? That this is sort of like you demand it for free, just like you're now upset that if Starbucks or Pete's or Coffee Bean doesn't provide you with free internet, you have an expectation, and they better do it. Right now you don't have it, so it's that's the sales conversation where you go and say like, no, you really need this because this will set you apart from your competitors, right? Yeah. So you have this sort of like first mover, there's a first mover hurdle, so to speak. It's probably going to be more in your personal, where you have a personal choice, where you say, okay, I have a phone, it works with Qi, it works with Guru, and here's a Guru transmitter. This is so much more convenient than trying to put it on the Qi charger. You still need to adjust it. I mean, it's not a lot of work, right? But you still need to kind of place it correctly. And if I place it a little bit more, then it's going to charge up a little bit faster. You would find that, okay, if I place my phone on my work desk, it's on there 12 hours a day anyway. It's always charged. That's so much better. I can pick it up at any time. I just place it. I don't have to think about it. So that value proposition is probably the one that for a mobile phone user that you would go after. And then certainly we are going after. Yeah, but I agree. It's going to be ubiquitous. You're going to have it in your pizza or whatever. It may not be next year. It's most likely not going to be next year, but it'll be there. Compared to the Wi-Fi, we're probably in the year 1996, 1997. So we have solutions. They're starting to get deployed. And then in a couple of years from now, you'll see it being adopted more and more. by more and more device manufacturers.
If you compare that to a Starbucks and then see if, okay, you know, railway station where, you know, thousands of people come and go, is that dangerous to deploy something like that in the railway station compared to Starbucks where, you know, there are 50 to, let's say 40, 50 people at time, but then railway station, we are talking about more people.
It's not, so our system doesn't, so I can speak for our system. Our system doesn't flood the whole place with energy. It's still point. So it would still be point to point. So you would be getting something at your railway station for your phone. The person next to you doesn't gets it for their phone. There's nothing in between. For the phone, literally, we can send power to a phone. And if your hand is here, there's no power here. I mean, there's always some amount of power, but it's orders of magnitude less. Mm-hmm. Right? So your phone might be getting a watt. Your hand might be getting a microwatt. So yes, it doesn't necessarily become less safe just because the space is larger. The railway station or maybe the airport, I don't know, people in the US fly more than in Europe. People in Europe take the train. You don't spend much time at the rail station, maybe inside the train, more time. Right. So then, but then it's more like you put it on the table or something.
Yeah.
But you don't worry about right now charging your device. You worry about it at an airport because you can't really, it's a pain to charge it inside the plane. That's why we were talking to several avionics companies. But inside an airport, it's sort of like on the borderline. People typically want to charge their phone because they want to have it in the plane or. Yeah. You know, but many planes nowadays have USB jacks and so on.
Anyway. Yeah. Yeah. But when you're waiting, let's say you have to wait for X amount of hours, right? So your flight mm-hmm. gets delayed and that's quite normal for the aviation. And that's where I felt like, shit, if I had a charging point, I would be very happy right now. And until I board the plane, then only I get to charge, right? So those kind of situations. Yeah.
And airport is a good use case example in that sense. And yes, if you have to wait for the train for 3 hours, you also have a use case there.
Yeah.
If you're just commuting, it's probably less so.
Okay. And how do you see this IoT space, you know, overall, like, you know, being in this space and maybe directly or indirectly contributing to this space, you know, how do you see the evolution, first of all? And how do you see this going even further now that, you know, we are talking about 5G and so forth? Like, how do you see the entire evolution?
It's going to expand. IoT will expand pretty rapidly. And right now, and IoT is a good application example because you're limited to how many batteries or how many wires can you run. Ideally, you'd like to deploy, at least in industrial settings and in commercial settings, you'd like to deploy as many sensors or as many tags or as many communication devices as you possibly can. I mean, up to a limit, right? But you're currently limited by the number that you can deploy basically on a service. And the expensive part is the servicing. If your temperature sensor in your manufacturing facility breaks, in your car you can ignore it, right? If your tire sensor, you know it's broken, okay, whatever, I don't need to replace it now. It's in a manufacturing setting and you have a temperature sensor and it breaks because it's out of power and it shows, you know, whatever unsafe temperature, you need to service it. So, and if you have 10,000 of these sensors, one of them will always be broken.
Yeah.
And so you're really limited to how much you can service and how much you can power them. And if you have to lay wires and so on. So a system like that is has a real value proposition. If you don't need to change batteries or power them. In terms of the ubiquitousness of data and sensing and power, it's happening. It's going to continue. It has been happening. This is one aspect to it that enables more of it happening. If you can have repeaters that transmit data, that also transmit your power, or that you can power, if they're cheap, you can deploy them, they will be deployed. People are using more and more data every year. They're using more and more connectivity every year. People post, there's more and more stuff of this available for better or worse every year. Right? Nowadays, like, you can find everything there's to find out about me or you. You know, if you're Google, you have all the data. If you're Facebook, you have all the data. Mm-hmm. we're going to be in the brave new world no matter what happens. And part of that will be more sensors, more connectivity. And, you know, it's also going to result in much more productivity in the end.
Yeah, one of the worry that I have is as we are going into this, you know, at least on paper, we are trying to go more cleaner and greener energy and, and so forth, right? And at the same time, we have this 5G, you know, implementation on a rapid scale, perhaps, you know, faster in some countries, perhaps some countries need to catch up and so forth, which only means that we will have more and more devices, you know, connected to the internet. What do you think about the consumptions on the energy sector? You know, what would that do to the energy sector? And what's your point of view on that?
Well, first of all, is there anything you or I can do to prevent this? Probably not. In terms of 5G and connectivity, 5G, you can actually make an argument and that you have, you're saving on power, because with 5G, at least for data, you're sending the data to the device. You're not broadcasting it everywhere. Energy consumption worldwide is going up per capita. Your devices, let's see how much, your devices don't consume all that much energy. You're European, so you're not, I'm not American either, by the way, so I'm European too. Americans use a tremendous amount of energy compared to Europeans. Per capita, so I know it for the US and Germany, the per capita energy consumption in the US is 3 kilowatts. It's not energy, power consumption, it's 3 kilowatts, meaning the total US energy, the total US power production and consumption, if you divide it by the number of people, works out to be, this includes industrial uses, personal uses, and so on, works to about 3 kilowatts. Half of that is gasoline, so half of this is your car, half of this is electric power. Your phone uses about half a watt of that. If you're European, so I looked up the number from Germany, I'm originally from Germany, it's about half of that. I think it's a little bit less than half of that. Europeans drive a lot less because Europe is much smaller. These are technological problems. I view them as they're solvable by technology. Maybe this can be a little bit controversial. We are using more and more energy. We need to generate it. We are making, the world is making great progress in terms of green energy. Green energy will be here, whether you want it or you don't want it. I want it, but it's going to be here. It's been, energy production has been greener and greener since people started burning wood. Does that mean we can be nonchalant about global problems? No, absolutely not. But I'm an optimist. The Netherlands, below sea level, they're not underwater because you built a dam or a dike or something like that. People will be using more energy. More of our energy will be coming from renewable sources. You don't need all that much energy or all that many solar cells, for example, to provide solar cell power. Fusion energy, so hydrogen fusion will be here. I mean, it's been talked about for 50 years, but there was actually just the plant in France. It's very clean energy, just like nuclear energy. The problem with nuclear power is not how clean it is. The problem is the waste, right? Mm-hmm. Fusion energy doesn't have that problem. You will have fusion plants in our lifetime. You will have wind, water sources. We won't be burning coal in 35 years from now. But so we will survive as a species, I think. I'm an optimist. I'm sorry.
35 years from now, I'm talking about tomorrow, right? So,
well, but you also have to put things in perspective, right? So if you're concerned about climate change is also not something that's going to happen tomorrow. It's something that's going to happen in 50 to 100 years, and the climate will change. There's no doubt about this. In the last warm period, 130,000 years ago, temperatures were higher than they were now, most likely. Mm-hmm. Definitely sea levels were higher. So no doubt, sea levels will rise. We will adapt. We need to address these issues. Your cell phones and stuff are a minor fraction of what it is. It's cars and it's industrial energy usage. I'm not trying to be nonchalant about it, but I'm trying to put...
No. And I like the positive side of you where you're optimistic and saying, okay, you know, we are making that progress and that progress is visible. That progress, at least in the European region, we hear every now and then that one of the countries is being, let's say, 100% green in by 2030 or something, you know. So that's the mandate, right? And hopefully they agree there and they keep their promise. And we would like to. We would like.
Yes. The US, right?
Right. So at least in that perspective, I'm quite hopeful as well. But let's see. Let's see that side.
I'm gonna lean out a little bit. I just want. This is where my thinking comes from. Maybe I'm wrong, and I'm not trying to downplay anything. So we need to do things, but we're also talking about problems that happen in 30 years, or 50 years, or make it 20 years, or maybe make it 100 years. Who knows? There's also progress. If you, let's say, make it 100 years, think about the people who lived 100 years ago. They came back and said, we know exactly what your problems is and we know what the solutions for your problems 100 years from now are. Mm-hmm. You probably say, you have no idea. You have no idea. You don't know what a laser is. You don't know what a computer is. You don't know what DNA is. You know nothing. So there's, a good medium between doing things now that are irreversible, that we know for a fact about. Mm-hmm. But there's also an argument to be made for being optimistic and saying and talking to the people, like talking to our future generation, because these kinds of problems are always said like, well, our future generations will always like come back and point the finger at us. They will do that for sure. But if you think about like, what were the problems that you wanted our past generations to really tackle? You know, probably fascism and communism, you know. That's responsible for at least 100 million deaths. Those were the big problems, right? And no one was concerned. I mean, people were concerned about them, but they didn't solve those problems, right? Yeah. Let's do the things now that we can do, and we're doing them now. But again, I'm an optimist, and I think we'll be all right.
Yeah, interesting.
Nothing, but we'll be okay.
Yeah. Let's look into your slightly different topic about your organization, you know, and if you look at the structure of the organization, obviously you have some people working for you and there might be, let's say, people who are your colleagues, or your peers and so forth. How do you manage this particular structure at this point in time, right, which is not a regular time? And how do you keep that communication, not just saying, okay, you know, I've used Zoom and so forth, right? Which is pretty flat out, right? So I'm trying to maybe understand from the organizational perspective, how is that working for you?
It's working much better than I was afraid it was going to work 6 months ago, I have to say. People have been managing teams overseas before COVID. A team can work together if you have the right team and if you have the right leadership and if you have the right communication, whether or not they are in each other's faces every day. You talk to people, Zoom, it's personal enough. I mean, you know everyone. The last person who joined us has been our VP of Business Development. She is working actually in the Bay Area, so she's remote. Mm-hmm. She's always been remote. It's not a big issue. I mean, and companies have managed overseas teams for decades. So it's the same issue, right? I mean, the reverse is also true. If you have shitty leadership, it doesn't matter whether everyone's coming to the office, the company still will crumble and fail, right? So, yeah. But it works much better than I was worried about it. But people get things done, you can communicate, and it's made me even more optimistic about, like, you know, after this is over in a year or in a year and a half from now.
So that's a good optimism, right? So I like to also hope
trying to be realistic there, right? It's going to be over. That would be my estimate.
We are also finger crossing on one of the company from Germany, I guess, who are active on that. So I'm also looking forward to that. But let's see. Given the rate that we are increasing every single day, let's see.
People are probably going to be immune to it. It's the virus will be around for longer than obviously a year or a year and a half, but it would be under control, I would think, in 2 years. People seem to have immunity. I think the biggest problem is that hospitals don't get overwhelmed, right? You don't want everyone to get this at once. Putting things in perspective, it's not smallpox, right? So if you read up on, if you think about like what was smallpox like in the Middle Ages, you had epidemics where 80% of a village is dead within like 2 weeks. Fortunately, we don't have that. And then there's no good reason other than pure luck that we don't have that, right? Yeah. There's no reason why COVID couldn't be 100 times more deadly than it actually is.
Yeah, and again, coming back to the leadership and also organizational side, you said you have to pick the right team. And how do you know you're picking the right team, right? So how do you...
You don't. You can interview someone forever. There are people who work well. There are people who don't work well. Most people work well in some situations, some work well in other situations. So it's not like blaming people. It's about, you know, is it the right, are you offering the right things to the right person? Is the person seeking for the right things that you can offer? You find out by working with people, right? So we found out, fortunately, that our team works very well in the current situation. But you don't know. And it's about motivation, right? Do people see, for a startup like ours, it's people who would like to have the challenge and who would like to work on new, exciting things and not necessarily come in for a paycheck. There's nothing wrong to go into work to get a paycheck. That's plenty fine. But for a startup like ours, people are typically looking for the excitement and for looking for new things every day. So there you go. Have a new thing.
Right, because it is quite new, you know, even for me, you know, like I give you the example, like, you know, I was hoping that one day I will have a SMS of power, right? So that was me, right? Thinking about those, and now it's possible. So thank you for that. Thank you for making that possible. Yeah. And indeed, like when people think about how it works and understand the whole principle beneath that, then of course, like people who are intrigued by that would be interested in joining startup like you. So which is interesting, you know, because you're not a regular startup, you know, it's something innovative, it's something new, something fresh. So yeah, I'm really seeing that, you know, you have quite interesting people working for you.
Yes. Yeah, no, I'm super happy with the team. I mean, they've been amazing in the last year. They made things happen in the last year, despite all the personal sacrifices, the difficulties with the situation. So I can't be happier. And yeah, we'll be doing great things.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I think I've spent all your time. I burned all the hours. So it was indeed an interesting conversation with you, because like I said, this is something that is interesting for me. Whenever people come up with something interesting, I like the fact that this is coming up, and I want to sort of, you know, wish all the best to you in terms of getting out there, and maybe one day I will see that, you know, you have already powered Starbucks or maybe you know, Antwerp Central someday.
We have visibility for products that are 12, 18, and 24 months out the door, so you'll see this. But let me also add, it was really enjoyable for me. I really enjoyed